Hey, this is comedian Mark Maron, and I love Mr. Media Radio, even though he didn't let me go on as long as some other guests.
The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to Home Shopping Network health and fitness guru Tony Little. Trust me, there is rarely a quiet or dull moment around this guy. Stick around. And keep that six-pack tucked and tight, people. Conceive, believe, achieve. You can do it! So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. Brought to you today by Amazon.com. When you visit MrMedia.com and click on any of the links to purchase books, music, movies, gift certificates, or anything else through our Amazon link, you support this free video podcast. Whenever you need something else from Amazon, please consider returning to MrMedia.com to order it. It doesn't cost you any extra, and we sure appreciate the support. And don't forget, MrMedia.com has more than 1,200 celebrity audio and video interviews archived on the site. That's hundreds upon hundreds of hours free entertainment. Subscribe for free on MrMedia.com, and you'll instantly get an email every time a new interview is posted. You can also watch and subscribe to the show on YouTube, Vimeo, Dailymotion, The Realm Network, and Frequency.com. And if you prefer to just listen, Mr. Media is also available for free on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blueberry, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Podfeed.net, and Player FM. You can subscribe to any of those services and never miss another episode. Finally, you can interact with Mr. Media interviews on all kinds of social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and more. Friend or follow us, we'll friend or follow you back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience full of self-righteous men and women who swear by their daily fitness routines, eat right at every meal, and, whenever you're not looking, cheat, 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 in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.
Cheat. Cheat, cheat.
The Tampa Bay area of Florida, where Mr. Media has been recorded twice a week since 2007, has produced its share of national brands and personalities. Remember the morning zoo phenomenon of the 1980s? Cleveland Wheeler and Scott Shannon started that here at Q105. Hooters Restaurants began in the Clearwater Shack. The chain also launched original Hooters girl Lynn Austin to fame, fortune, and Playmate of the Year. Another restaurant chain, Outback Steakhouse, also emerged from here. And the late as-seen-on-TV commercial spokesman Billy Mays, best known for OxyClean products, got his explosive start out of Palm Harbor. Now, this is also the community where Roy Spear and Bud Paxson launched the Home Shopping Club, which morphed into the international powerhouse Home Shopping Network, HSN. And that's where today's guest first captured your attention and imagination 29 years ago. And just look at him. Pretty tan, taut, mischievous. Mischievous, I think I meant to say. There you go. Tony Little is the kind of health and fitness guru only a beach community in Florida or California could have produced. He exudes that wide-eyed confidence and eternal optimism that has merrily convinced a generation of followers in search of a better lifestyle to follow him. Like so many other unlikely retail stars created by the Home Shopping Network, and they currently offer 73 different Tony Little products plus recipes, Little has a compelling backstory of highs and lows that made him the man he is today. And, of course, you can read all about it in his memoir, There's Always a Way. Tony Little, welcome to Mr. Media.
Yeah, there is always a way, right? You know that.
There is a way.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't think like that, I mean, it's like when I used to say, you can do it, right? I said, what's the alternative? Everyone like it. They'd all go like, well, you can't always be that way. And I'm like going, what's the alternative? The alternative is you can't. So I rather think I can.
Where does that come from with you, Tony? I mean, your parents, were they like this? Were they different? Is there anything you grabbed from them?
Yeah, I grabbed a lot from my mom. We didn't get along, I mean, but she was a strong single mother of four. My dad, like I say, was like Daniel Day-Lewis in the movie New York. He was a rough, rough guy. Really? I remember one time going to like a Burger King when I was a little kid, and we were inside, and a bunch of guys drove around the thing with a big sign that said, you know, F. And my dad grabbed me, threw me in the car, chased him like 10 miles, caught him downtown, pulled the guy out through the window and sat him beside me and took him to jail.
Really?
Yeah. My dad was very aggressive. But I also spent a lot of time down in the basement getting the belt for not being home before dark or something like that. But my mom, you know, she was the strong one. She was a teacher and she had her master's in art. The biggest thing she did for me was she changed my environment, and then she changed my life. Meaning that I was hanging around with a lot of bad kids. I was a hyper kid then. If it's hard to believe, I know, but I was a hyper kid, but I was hyper in a bad way. You know, I was the only kid that skipped the school that my mom taught at. And I'd be over at the YMCA lifting weights and playing ping pong.
Wow.
But she'd get me drug back. So
That's actually sounds like Dave Grohl, whose mother was a teacher at his high school. And it's very similar in that regard. And then he wound up dropping out, which I think was very embarrassing to her, but worked out well for everybody, I guess.
Yeah. I would say I embarrassed my mother in other areas. But she was one of those people that, you know, you'd come home, and if you weren't in by midnight and she said the door's locked, it's locked. All right? You're going to have to find somewhere else to sleep because that ain't going to happen. You're not going to talk your way in.
And where was it that you grew up? Was it in Florida or somewhere else?
I grew up in Fremont, Ohio, a little town kind of, I guess, close to Sandusky, Ohio, or near Toledo, somewhere in there, on a kind of a farm. We lived right next to a dairy farm.
And how did you wind up in the Tampa Bay area?
The judge? The judge and my mom and my attorney. What happened was, yeah, because I was hanging out with the wrong people a lot, I people were much older than I was. I was, you know, I don't know, back then 14 or 15, and hanging with the wrong crowd. They were 21, 25, one of these guys had stolen a car. And then came to me and said, "Hey, how do you like my new car, Tony? You know, he's, oh, it's very cool." And then he's like, "You want to drive it?" And I said, "Sure." Like that. And we go out driving in the winter night in the country where there's absolutely nobody. And then all of a sudden there's somebody, like a sheriff.
Oh.
Ooh. And somehow I kind of like had that code. I don't know what it was, like protect the older guy, you know. And so I told the police that I stole it. And there's a long story behind it. But the big story is that they realized that I didn't, because I didn't know that the license plates were stolen. And I was trying to cover for the guy. So they knew I didn't do it. But still, my mom came up with the great idea to change my environment, which would change my life. So she told the judge that basically he's moving to Florida to live with my brother. And so the judge like said, if you can keep him out of Ohio for 3 years, that works with me. And so that's kind of how it happened.
That's what she did.
Yep, she motivated me.
I see. And so, I mean, so that was the, I mean, that would take us back to what I was curious about is there had to be a time when you were a guy just like anyone else, and clearly that was the case.
Yeah.
When did you become this guy who had ambition, who kind of saw that there was another way to get where you wanted to be?
I saw the ambition when I moved to Florida and I didn't want to create any friends, you know, because I didn't want to lose them again. Hmm. You know, for me, it was kind of traumatic because you grew up all this time with all these kids in the country and then all of a sudden they're all gone and I'm by myself in a new area, in a new school, in a different state. And so I got really focused on lifting weights and working out and into myself. My grades went up, you know, I got better because I wasn't messing around with other people and things like that. And I became motivated. And then one guy here in St. Pete, a guy named Dick Fudge represented a Mr. America in this area, which was a guy named Jim Haslip out of Tampa, and looked at me and said, you know, you could be the next Mr. America. You know, I think you really have. And so he started helping me train. And then I got into bodybuilding and, you know, a lot of stories, you know, about I started out in St. Pete in the bodybuilding area, and then I won the Mr. St. Pete, the Mr. Suncoast, and then the Mr. South Florida, and then the Mr. Florida, and then the Southern United States, and the Central United States. And I moved very quickly through the ranks because I was very focused and goal-oriented. I learned I read the books that we all read, I think, you know, the Norman Vincent Peale's and the Dennis Waitley's and the Tony Robbins books and all the motivational books. And it really did help me. I mean, it helped me. The biggest thing it helped me do was realize, you know, setting goals. You know, if you don't have a goal, you're like a boat without a rudder. And it made sense to me. So, yeah, it went pretty cool that way. And so bodybuilding was a big thing for me.
I had lunch yesterday with a friend of mine who is another, you know, I probably could have added him to the list of Tampa Bay people, Chuck Shepard. He does the weekly News of the Weird column. It's in all the alternative weeklies. And we were talking about motivation and how a person could hear 10 different motivational phrases or encouragements, and maybe one of the 10 will catch them, which is why, you know, what motivated you might be different than what motivates me, what motivates him. Was there someone along the path of the bodybuilding who pointed you to particular books, or I mean, there's probably that first book or motivational something that caught your eye and you went, hey, this is interesting.
Yeah, you know, I don't think so. I've been asked the question before, you know, did you look up at anyone? I was so maybe self-absorbed into not meeting anybody. I mean, I'm really, a lot of people don't even see me around town because I'm kind of not antisocial. I'm really social and I'm really, but I like being home, and I like when I get home, and I like being with my kids, and I don't go out much, you know? So the same way was when I was trying to become something with my life. I was very goal-oriented, very focused. You know, went in, did what I was supposed to do, went home, came back, and became a very regimented type person. And that just came from, I think, the experience of my mother switching my life and my environment, and me being kind of scared to be with anybody again, as far as friends. And then it allowed me to focus on me. And that was a good thing.
Was there a point which you pulled back a little bit from being that self? I mean, I hate to use the term, but that self-absorbed. It seems like you would have to.
Yeah, no, I definitely pulled back from. I was at Dixie. I graduated from Dixie Hotlands, which was a great, and it was during the times that, you know, you did the split shifts. So I had the perfect shift, the one that goes to noon, right? And then I could go to work, and so I started working for UPS. That's a funny thing. I mean, if there's a funny story about UPS here in St. Pete, was I started working for them, and I had a friend that kind of got me in there, and I asked all the right questions about, you know, what's the requirements to do this and do that. And so I started thinking about, you know, selling kind of myself, you know, for the first time in a lot of ways. And I learned that you had to go into the feeders, which were the big long tractor trailers. Right, and you had to throw packages out of those feeders to a conveyor belt that went two ways, and you might have to stay a year in that darn thing, right, or longer, right? And I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, I don't want to be in there being a, you know, physical crazy guy or whatever. So anyway, I started there, and my goal was throwing the packages out too fast for them to sort. And where I came up with that, I have no idea. But all I know is this gentleman named Gary Argus, who was this great guy who ended up going later on to, I think, FedEx, but was a long time with UPS. He'd come up to the feeder, the trailer I was in. He said, Tony, slow down. Slow down. Everyone's having to turn off the belts. They're not keeping up with the packages. Slow down. All right? And then he'd leave, and then I'd just throw him out again. I was out of that feeder in 2 weeks. I was on the belt. I had just moved up. And then I moved up to the position of, you know, loading the trucks. And then I moved to the position of the very end of the belt where I was Now the person who loads it by sequential load charge so they can see if it can be done. And now I got four, and I'm throwing all the packages at everybody else back to them. And then I get a chance to be a driver, and I decide I'm not going to be a driver. I'm going to be a car wash. And everyone's like, what? And I said, it pays the same. And every time that I see those drivers go out, and if they try to come back early, they send them out in another person's area. So I'm going to be a car wash because that means there might be 3 or 4 hours a night that I don't have to work if I get my job done early.
So I got to ask you, when was the point when your mom realized you had gotten your let's call it your act, you had gotten your act together, and suddenly you had gone from being the bane of her existence to someone that she, you know, could express some pride in?
Yeah, you know, I think that was pretty, you know, she moved down about a year later or maybe a year and a half later, and I lived with her, and I think we all got along, but my personality was still kind of hard to deal with, you know, type thing. But she saw me being very, you know, working hard, that sometimes having two jobs and moving out of her house by the time I was 16 and having my own apartment and being a real thing. So I think she respected me. I never really knew she did, all right, until after actually, you know, pretty much when she died. And I found her Bible, and it had a lock of my hair and a picture in there. And it was like, you know, it was one of those moments. But my mom, one of the things I was able to do when I started a home shopping network, a couple of the things I did that were very important. My first paycheck, I took care of my mom, and I went to her retirement dinner or whatever it was for teachers. And I was up there, and I said, you know, a long time ago, my mom sent me away. And I thought it was the worst thing that ever happened to me in my life. And then I realized that it was the most important thing that ever happened to me in my life. So I'm sending my mother away. And they're all looking at me like that. And my mom was, you know, taught art for all these years, 30 years, but she'd never been to Europe, to Monet and all, Castle and all the homes over there and the art and the things like that. So I sent her on an artist-only tour for 18 days. And it was it felt so good to give something back that she'd spent her whole life doing, and to give something back type thing. And so it was cool.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
And so let me ask you this. When you look in the mirror now, when you go to brush your teeth, you know, in the morning or at night, or in your case, maybe brush your hair, I mean, which guy do you see? Do you see the guy, you know, who moved here as a kid, had to move away from home, get away from the environment? Or do you see the guy that I'm looking at now? Who do you see in the mirror every day?
I see a guy that's tired. A guy's tired and worked really hard. I think I see a guy who believes there is always a way. I think that you see a guy who, I mean, we would never have enough time to talk about all the adversities that I've had. And it's not to say I haven't had more than a lot of different people, but I've obviously had my ups and downs. I feel like a lot of times that the most successes I've ever had have come from my back being against the wall. Whereas I've realized that I don't stay where I'm at. I always move forward and I figure it out. And that's why that book came out about there's always a way, because I just always felt, you know, there has to be a way, you know. So, I see a person who is tired in the respect that I'm constantly battling, you know, some type of mountain you got to climb, or a small mountain, then a large mountain, then a small mountain. And 1 minute you're like this, the next minute you're like this, and then you're like this again, you know. I don't think it's been steady, you know. I mean, like, I remember putting, when I was talking to my publisher, Wiley and such, about wanting to put the adversities of my life in a book and then put the victories of my life and put them down a column. And the reason I wanted to do that is because it seemed like every adversity I had somehow turned into a victory. And all the way down. I mean, it was quite amazing. I mean, I was electrocuted twice, right? And look at the creativity I have, you know. My dad, he ended up committing suicide, but, you know, And I had a lot of things. We had I was stolen from later on life from an accountant who went to prison here locally, and was stealing us from us when we were at the hospital at St. Joseph's with two premature babies that were in the hospital in the NICU for 3.5 months, right? A pound and a half each. And this guy takes that time to decide to clean out our bank accounts. So that was an adversity. It was an adversity with the children and having to deal with one who had a level 3 brain bleed and the other that had to have the little heart valve thing fixed when he was in there and to deal with all that and then to come out and find out you didn't have hardly any money left. But you know what was great about it was that because I'm such a strong believer that there is always a way, I had great partners and people and connections between HSN and other companies and people that believed in me. And they believed with all their heart I would never let them down. And so I think I'm driven not just by myself, but by driven by trying to make something a success for somebody else. Yeah. And it makes it more worthwhile to me.
And so before we were talking about how you got into the bodybuilding and the various levels you climbed, what's the connecting tissue between that and HSN in 85, 86?
What happened in after the bodybuilding and things like that, I quit UPS, and they were amazed that I was quitting, making so much money and being with a good long-term company. But I wanted to be a Mr. Florida and a Mr. America. And so I quit, and I was being groomed to be that. When I was hit by a school bus, Pinellas County school bus, with a drunk driver, and that ruined kind of my aspirations in the bodybuilding area. I did not place as high as I should have in the Mr. America because I injured my back and shoulders and stuff like that. So I spent 2 years in and out of hospitals, getting motivated and getting fixed and stuff like that. And then I started my own television show here with Westinghouse Cable Companies years ago. I remember that. I thought they would give it to me. I didn't realize I'd have to pay, but I paid and I had no television experience and found out how you could sell, ads to the television show locally and develop my own working out and shaping up show. And that moved along really nicely. And then I wanted to do my own exercise video like Jane Fonda. Bad word there, maybe in some respects, but she must have had a personal trainer somewhere along the line. And so I developed my first video, and I managed to go to Vegas, and whether it took arm wrestling or fast talking or whatever it took, I got a chance to. I had 6 different deals I got out of my first time at the between all the big film companies. So I was able to get into the video business. Little did I know. That all we had at that time was there was no retail for videos. It was rental, all right? And there wasn't that many rental places. And then you had Warner and A-Vision and all, and Paramount had all those guys tied up with their celebrities on those racks, Going in as a special interest, little tape, and they're like, I remember a person here locally interviewing me at the time going, well, that's, I understand you say you're going to be all this big and all this, and I said, but who are you? Right? And I said, somebody that you're going to know really well soon. You're going to know a lot about me soon, right? And I was really positive and kept working the media side of things and things like that. But I wasn't going anywhere and I wasn't getting my investors' money back, right? That had invested the money for me to do the video. And then I saw Home Shopping, sitting home watching Home Shopping, and it was being broadcast out of Clearwater, Florida.
Vision Cable.
Yeah, it was great, man. They had broadcast too at that time. They had Net One and Net Two, broadcast and cable, and Bud Paxton and Roy Spears had started it, and I called them. I must have called them at their offices every day and said, I've got this video. At the time, I only had one video, or actually, I think it was a 2-pack video, and I could never get through to their office, but obviously my messages got through all the time. And they'd say, no, we have no interest in videos here, no fitness or anything like that. it doesn't fit within our categories of, you know, skin creams and other stuff for women and things like that.
Can openers.
Yeah. At the time, well, yeah, that's how I made it start, right? Yeah. And so I kept trying and trying and trying for over a year, and then I don't take no's too easy. You know, I think every no is an opportunity to negotiate. You know, so I found out, you know, that his son owned a fitness gym in Clearwater.
Was this Roy's son?
Bud's.
Bud's son. Okay.
Bud's son, and it was a nice health club, you know. And I walked in there and I said, you know, I was fairly well known for what I did in the area, you know, for a while. And I said, you know, I'd really be interested in, you know, talking to your dad and to his son. And I said, I'd be willing to help you promote your gym in any way you needed help, because I'm pretty good in that area. If you could get me like 10 minutes with your dad. And his name was Todd. He was a great guy. And he said, well, hop in your car. And I went, you know, okay.
And were they still on Hercules then?
Not
in the industrial park?
They were, they originally were on Hercules, and they were moving over to St. Pete. And and the gym was over on Hercules, you know. And so I went over there. But anyway, when he said, follow me, I had no idea we were going to the Roebling Estate, which was over in Clearwater, which is, you know, a big Tudor mansion with the big gates. And the gates opened up, and I'm like, going, wow, this is cool, you know, like that. And I follow him in, and we walk inside the house, and I had never met Bud, right? I didn't know he was like 6'7", right? And we walk inside, and his dad's there, and Todd's getting ready to introduce me, and he says, Dad, this is, and he said, Tony Little. That's Tony Little. And I went, oh, and he's like going, what are you doing in my house? And Todd said, he's going to help me with the gym, Dad. And I said, I just wanted to talk to you if I could about those videos. And he was explaining why they didn't work and everything. Long story short, before he got me out of the house, he took an order of 400 videos. Wow. And said, if they sell out in 4 appearances, we'll buy some more. But I don't believe it, right? And then so he put him on with Bobby Ray, who was our first host at the time, and she went on the air and she showed him exactly the way that I had placed the stuff. Because he wanted just to do the before and after where, you know, you're just heavy and you get in shape. Mm-hmm. I wanted to show the Junior Mr. America picture, then me out of shape, and then me today, to show that I've had 3 transitions. It wasn't just this. I knew what I was doing. I didn't know what I was doing. I know what I'm doing again, you know. They did it, and we sold out of the 400 like in 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then I get a call from Bud saying, I want to order 1,000 more, but I think it's a fluke. And they ordered 1,000 more, and then later on that kind of ended up being more of a project of his. They're always scared of a little bit of putting me on air, because, you know, I was very live and very different and that thing. But then I think it was 1986 or 87, between their Thanksgiving of that, Bud came up and said, I want you to go live on air on Net. Well, I think it was either Net 1 or Net 2. And Phyllis Diller is going to go on the other network. And I'm like, really? And he says, yeah, I want you to go out there and be the fitness guy and act like a celebrity.
Act like a celebrity. Yeah.
He was using me as a prototype. He wanted to see a co-host situation of some sort worked with the single host, you know? And or if, you know, the relationship of an expert versus a host or a celebrity and a host would work. You're a very smart man. And I said, yeah, I'll do it. And then I was like, how do you do it? But we got on the air the same day with Phyllis on the other side and me on the other side. And they didn't have automated answering things, right? So we went on. We blew the lines up. I believe they got fined by General Bell at General Telephone, but because they couldn't take the amount of calls we were generating. And that's where the Tootie came from, right?
Right.
We're so busy now. Go to online. Onk, onk, onk.
That was the signal.
Yeah.
I remember.
It was a great experience. It was a wonderful experience, and it's been a great experience ever since. So.
Well, I know one of the things that people never, certainly outside of the Tampa Bay area where they started from, people never really respected them or understood them. I remember I had met Bud in 83 or 84 when they were on Hercules in that little tiny office that they had in the warehouse district. And I had a TV show. It was Florida Rocks. It was kind of MTV-ish. We had started doing it at the same time MTV did. It was all like Florida bands. And I had gotten an appointment to go in and see him because they had time available when they were off air. And they were, so I was trying to convince him, hey, run this.
Cool.
And he kept me waiting for, I don't know, 2 hours in his little lobby. And you know, the Fuller Brush man came, the can opener guys came, the cream women came, all the salespeople. Kept me waiting and waiting. I finally get in to see him. Well, that's ridiculous. That's stupid. Get out of my office. And I was just like, oh, my God. And, you know, I know he could be very difficult, very hard to convince, and he got very full of himself as the years went on.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's why I was very curious to see your story. It's a great story. I mean, how you finally got in to see him.
Yeah, I think that it was, you know, it's just I got very fortunate. I don't take no's easy and found a way. That's why I always say there's always a way. I mean, I remember – wanting to do music, this will you'll kind of get a chuckle out of, and telling my kids I'm going to be in the record store right behind all the other people, and they're like going, you can't even sing, you can't play an instrument, how are you ever going to do it? I said, I'm going to create fitness music, and they're like, what? My kids, you know, I think they were probably 13, 14, 15, whatever, and my concept was, what's more kick butt than a personal trainer? Kick butt music. What happens when you're listening to your favorite tune when you're running? You're hauling butt. You're into it. And then the second cut sucks, right? You slow down. Everything's gone. So I had this concept about personal trainer music years ago. So I actually own the trademark on personal trainer music. And I wrote a letter to the CEO and president of, Capitol Records and EMI. Music, and he lived in London, England. And I, by now, am working for HSN in the U.S., and I'm working for QVC in the U.K. I worked for QVC in the U.K. for 12 years.
Wow.
So I'm doing international now. I'm like, you know, type thing. I was able to move over there. So I wrote this guy a letter and used just that pitch, like that, a little more crass than that. But I sent this letter, and he answered me back and said, you want to do lunch? Honest to gosh. And so I went to lunch with the gentleman in London, and he called Capitol Records while I was there and said, I want to bring this Tony Whittle guy in to Capitol Records. Let him go through all of our libraries, our music libraries. Let him pick the tunes that he wants, and let's negotiate and get him. He wants to do 4 CDs. Let's let him do it. And that was as simple as it was. And I ended up right next to Limp Bizkit in Walmart.
And Fred Durst thanks you for that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's amazing some of the things. I remember being called, definitely a lot of people don't know about this. I was called by Jimmy Iovine. You know him?
Of course. Producer.
Yeah. And they picked me up in a big limo and took me out to a house in Malibu in the early days when they were involved with Warner. And Atlantic Records and all that stuff. And I'm like, as I'm going over there, I'm like, I don't know anything about music, really. I mean, I was only kidding when I did my little music thing, right? And I got there, and he was so cool. I mean, he wears his little Converse shoes and then a hat like me, and he's like full of this energy and stuff like that. And I'm with my agent, who's this guy named Ray Manzella over there in L.A., and I'm like, what am I doing here? And he says, well, we own Interscope Records, right? And I said, oh, yeah, that's got the cool, you know, it's got all the good people in it. And he goes, yeah. And he says, and we're starting a video company, and I want you to run it. And I'm like, what?
Wow.
And I said, I don't think I could do it. I don't know that much about music, you know? And he said, Yeah, but you know a lot about selling videos because you outsold Warner's Home Vision by yourself. And I said, yeah, but I mean, I went and he said, no, I think you'd be really good in this business, you know. And that went so far, I wasn't sure about it, right? Went so far that they then flew me to New York, and I sat down with Doug Morris, you know, who was the head of Atlantic Records.
Yeah.
There's this, I can't, you know, what he said was amazing to me. And, you know, I don't like to say it because it was very weird for me to be in the position because I just wanted to be my own brand, you know. And you look back and you go, man, I wonder what would have happened if I'd have been able to be with such an amazing guy. Maybe I'd own part of Beats.
I was just going to say to you, Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre created Beats, sold it to Apple last year for $3 billion.
I really missed out.
You did.
No, you did. I thought I was doing good.
You need a Back to the Future time machine to go change your mind on that.
No question. But Doug Morris and them asked me to stand up and talk, and I talked like for maybe 3 minutes, 4 minutes, and he told me to sit down, and I'm like going, like, oh, okay, I'm sitting down, and he goes, I got it already.
Oh.
I'm like going, I don't know what the guy, he said, I got it, because Jimmy and Ray and everybody's talking about you and your personality and what you do, and I swear, it was unbelievable, it was surreal. He says, a lot of my people came to me and told me about another guy who they were just amazed with. They're so talented and so great. And I just, in the beginning, maybe didn't quite get it. But when I met him in person, I totally got it. And his name was Garth Brooks.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, that guy. So I'm like going, holy moly. But he was so cool because he goes, you're obviously not a musician. You're not a music guy. But I really believe that if you could have played a guitar, if you could have sung, if you could have done any other things, you'd still been who you are. I mean, you'd been good at it, right? So it was really great. So they were interested. I just, you know, I just really was following my own path. I wanted to be me, you know, and I really didn't think I would deliver for them because I didn't understand the industry. And then I got a call from David Hasselhoff.
The Hoff.
Oh, yeah. And his group over there, I forget the producers of Baywatch, right? And they brought me in. And I was getting a lot of attention because they didn't understand the power of shopping channels, right? They couldn't understand why this little guy was selling all this stuff, you know, and growing. And everyone originally thought I was a liar. When I say, hey, I just sold 250,000 tapes myself, they're like, think, yeah, right? Your own distribution. But they offered me kind of a similar thing. They offered me to be involved with Baywatch, come in every quarter and be on television with Baywatch as long as I would develop the fitness line.
I'll tell you something funny. I don't think I've talked about this on this show in all these years. I make my living as a writer. I actually owe
15 books. I already know. You have 15 books.
There you go. But here's the thing.
You're good.
Well, thank you. But do you know what I owe it to, actually? I don't think I've ever acknowledged this publicly. I actually owe it to Bud Paxton and Roy Spear in the most strange way. I had a book proposal. The first book proposal I ever worked on was about – I wanted to do the history of HSN. I think they were coming up on their 25th year at the time. And my agent had taken it around – to New York, and you know, all the book publishers, as you know, are in New York, and they had absolutely no respect for HSN and that industry at all. They viewed it, they literally, this is what they said, it's the flea market of the airwaves. And we got very close to selling it to Random House, and at the last second they had like a editorial meeting, and the editor who was going to buy it got shot down by the people above him.
What a mistake.
And then the reason I still give them credit that book, Three weeks later, the editor called and offered me another book, and that wound up selling like 100,000 copies. And then the career has been great since then. But I have to give credit where credit is due. Yeah. In their own backwards way, they gave me a career. And
you were still going to ski off of them.
Well, there you go. It still worked out.
You know what's interesting about that you say, though? Obviously, they're such a powerhouse now, and then you – you got a $3 billion or a $4 billion company there, and you got QVC in the billions, and now every country has one. Because television, in a very simple way, explains to the consumer what a darn product does, which you just don't get in retail, right? So that was the concept of it. But what I thought was always amazing also with Bud and Roy was I always used to chuckle at the seeing them in the Guinness World Book of Records, right? For the most amount of money made in the shortest amount of time, legitimately. You know? And I thought that was cool. What they both took what, $650 million apiece when they sold? Yeah, flea market, right? Yeah, that's a hell of a flea market.
And that was the thing. I mean, I was going to say before is that being here, I remember when they started and they went to the TV because they had been the radio show for – they had the radio station and selling the can openers and all that kind of stuff. But when they went to TV and Vision Cable was the first to carry them, you would sit – we didn't have a lot of – there weren't 100 channels then. You would sit in front of the TV and watch them offer all these different products for sale, even if you didn't buy it. So when something actually came up, like a Tony Little video that you weren't expecting, you went, oh, wow, I'd try that. And suddenly you'd buy it. That was the power, is that people were glued to their sets. They didn't have a lot of TV options. There wasn't a lot of things to watch. And then suddenly you've been watching this parade of things being sold. And then suddenly Bob Sercosta came up and offered, boom, and you're like, wow, yeah, I want that. That was the power.
Well, think how they've moved now. I mean, you know, you've got all these celebrities everywhere on there. I mean, every celebrity wants to be on HSN because it's the power of numbers. I mean, you're in 100 million homes. And the other day I was on there, and I think for the day I sold 800 treadmills. Well, how long would it take Sports Authority to sell that, right? That was 2 hours, right? So the power of the distribution now has – all every major A, B, double A celebrity interested in at least being over there because their products are going to have such exposure so quickly that it affects the market. And so it's really – it's an amazing transition.
Sometimes – not every product is going to be a winner that
no, yeah, you're,
in there. I mean there's yeah. – They've had their share of dogs, and they have the outlet stores to prove it.
Yeah.
But I do remember being a fairly young married guy, and we needed cookware. And my wife said, I keep seeing these Wolfgang Puck sets on TV. Dog. And it's just like, Wolfgang Puck, obviously he's got a name for – but we're gonna buy celebrities' cookware? Yeah. And it's a great deal. Okay, all right. So we got it. I was amazed. It was great quality stuff. And then when we had to replace it years later, we went and bought another line of Wolfgang Puck stuff.
He's an amazing guy. I mean, his product, you know, there's certain people, like, for example, they've had a lot of chefs over there, right? But like you say, not everything works. Why Wolfgang worked is he had personality. He spoke what he wanted to speak, and he backed what he sold, right? Whereas just some of the other people are just names on a product. He really lived the product, and so that gave you a great product. Right. You know, me, I live what I do. So, you know, positive lifestyle. You know, 5 days a week, my body's a temple. 2 days a week, it's an amusement center.
80-20 rule. I learned that working on a book called The Corporate Athlete. 80% of the time, I do pretty well. 20% of the time, hey, you know, you got to eat. You got to have something that makes you laugh.
Yeah,
you know. Well, let me ask you this about the products and stuff that you sell. First of all, what has been the most successful product that you've sold, and what has flamed out?
You know, I get the question a lot on the flamed out thing because I've been very fortunate. I got a good hitting ratio, you know, because I have the luxury of being able to present products that, you know, for some reason I'm involved in quite heavily of the development of. And obviously if you're in the development of a product, you're in love with what you're putting out. So that makes it easier for me. I don't do much endorsement type stuff. You know, it's my stuff. It's my brand. But Gazelle was huge. You know, the Gazelle was over $1.5 billion. And a lot of people don't realize it, but that it's kind of interesting. That was the live to tape show. Most infomercials are, you know, 10 hours, 12 hours shot in pieces. But the reason why people love that was because it wasn't a script. it was live. I mean, I just used live because if I've already sold something 10,000 times on HSN, right, don't change the pitch, right? Just let me do what I do.
Right.
And back then, it transitioned real well. We had seven infomercial hits. I think we had two that made it up to nine. And, you know, we owned the record for the most amount of hits under one name. So it was pretty cool. And those were, you know, 81 country type things. So those were very cool. I had one product that I did, though. I do remember it was an elliptical way back when, and it was painted blue. And it had a clear disc wheel, and it was called the Eclipse. And I think the name is what caused the problem, because when it went on air, it must have eclipsed over the numbers because I didn't see any sold. Right? And I was feeling really scared about 5-10 minutes in.
Wow.
I've never seen that before, right? And it was the only product I remember that really was not a hit. And it could have been the color. It could have been the name. I have no idea, but it just didn't go.
Considering the number of hits you've had, I guess you can suffer one.
Yeah.
Tell me, I'm just looking at the time. I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I got to ask you, when you did the book, There's Always a Way, and by the way, folks, if you're watching on MrMedia.com, below the video, you'll see the book. You can click on it, order it immediately. But was it a reflective thing for you to do a book? We've talked a lot about your past here, and I know you've done interviews before. You've talked about these things, but I mean, was it difficult to kind of look within and think about where you had been and what you had done? Did you learn anything about yourself?
Yeah, I think I learned a lot about myself. You know, the guy that came down and helped me, you know, listen to me for a week and a half at my house, ask me great questions like you do, and we talked, and I think we got really deep in the thing. And I became very amazed of how many obstacles that I had and how many times I thought outside the box to get somewhere, right? And I think that I don't know how to explain that. You know what I'm saying? I'm a GED. I'm not a college graduate. I'm not all this stuff. How did I get to the point where I could be like that? But I think a lot of that came later. I had a thinking out of this. I just never thought inside a box. You know, I never was like this. So I'm not opposed to going out of my way to do things that people wouldn't think about, you know, at the time. And I did think there was always another way. What I thought was weird about the book was I let loose a lot of personal information that I didn't know. Hey, listen, I never thought that the – did you know this? Because if you read the book, this is an interesting thing. I'm talking about the other than the assassin, right, that tried to be my friend and thought I would be his partner in hitman territory, all right, there was the guy that was the head of the National Association kind of bodybuilding for Florida, right? And I'll never forget it. He shook my hand one time when I'd won like these three overall trophies but didn't win the overall thing, and everyone was booing. And he said, you only go as far as I want you to go now, you know, politically. Right?
Yeah.
And right to me. And I didn't quite know what to do with it, but what I did is I went to all the muscle magazines and I exposed what he said. And I said that that's going to be very hard to do because I'm going to go out and win my national contest first, and then I'll come back to the state contest of Florida. And if I've already won my nationals, why wouldn't I win my state? Right? And I came back and I won a unanimous state. But that guy afterwards kept calling me and said, come on down to Miami. Hang out, you know, we can be friends now and all that. That was the guy that Mark Wahlberg story was about.
Wow.
The one that was found all the body parts.
Yeah.
They were cutting up the people. He kept calling. His name was John Meese. He was like, Tony, come on down and hang out with us. You know, like, yeah. I said, I'm glad I had a good feeling about not going down and being friends with him.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he ended up in prison. I died in prison. But then that story with Wahlberg and everything, you know, what was it called? Get the Burn or something? I forget what it is. It was a big hit on the movies. But it was all about this CPA slash head of the thing with two kind of not so smart physical fitness guys killing people to and taking over their identities.
Nice to have dodged that bullet, huh?
Yeah, I dodged a couple interesting bullets at the time. And I just managed to attract some of those people. I remember sitting down at one of the clubs out at the beach on Treasure Island, and a guy sitting down right beside me immediately and telling me he was the little drummer boy. And I was like, I go to the bathroom. I'm out of here. It was always something.
Oh, my God. All right, look, I got one more question for you, and this may be the most important question I ask you this whole time that we've been together here. I'm thinking it's got to be very hard to be you and walk into McDonald's and order a quarter pound with cheese fries and a Coke. So I'm guessing that you must be the drive-thru guy. You can't be seen going into a place like
it's
that.
It's so weird you should say that. My wife calls me the other day on the way home, and she says, could you go to Chick-fil-A? And I go there, you know, and the drive-thru is crowded, so I walk inside, and there's like – the drive-thru's packed, but there's nobody inside. And so I'm talking to everybody in there. And believe me, Chick-fil-A is not, you know, that much healthier than any other place with the fried chicken and stuff like that. But no, they're great. I've been into McDonald's many times, especially after fishing or something, you know, where you're out on a boat a long time. Give me a quarter pounder with cheese. Just don't give me any ketchup, all right? I really, truly believe in what I told you about the temple theory, and you talk about the 80-20. I really, truly believe that 5 days a week, when you have a normal in your work week, your goals are set, you're working hard, you're exercising hard to keep smart, keep your mind and your body stimulated. But there's got to be 2 days where you blow it, all right? And I call those the amusement days. And that also worked really good in my career if, you know, I happened to be out drinking a bunch of martinis or something and somebody comes up, what are you doing with that? Well, for one, vodka is a personal trainer drink, all right? And two, it's my amusement day, all right? So, yeah, I'm human. I'm not – I did the Lifetime Achievement Award at the National Fitness Hall of Fame for Jack Lane, and I was very clear that, you know, there'll never be another Jack Lane. I'll never be a Jack Lane. I can't even pull one boat behind me without drowning, you know, all right? And believe me, Jack used to always say, if it tastes good, spit it out. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Right.
I'm a different type of fitness guy. I modern day fitness, I guess.
Jack was a little, he'd be extremely extreme for this era, but he was really extreme for the 60s and the 70s. I remember watching him when I was a kid going, wow, I could never be like that. And then as you learn about him as you get older, that he really, I mean, he was that way inside and out 24/7.
He was real. He was the real deal. I asked him about the two white shepherds you used to have on the show years ago. He said, I got sued. They bit everybody.
Oh, God. All right. Well, listen, folks, you can shop for any one of the 73 Tony Little products at hsn.com. And if you'd like to order a copy of his book, his memoir, there's always a way. You can click on the book cover or the text link below this interview, below the video. Or if you're listening, there's a link there, too. You want to send people – we send people to hsn, of course, .com. But you want to send people to TonyLittle.com?
You know, I want people to send me video imitating me on video saying you can do it to YouTube because I'm giving away like 153 gifts or prizes to that.
Okay.
I want energy. You know, I want people to send me things with acting crazy, and I don't care if they're on a machine or they're on the floor or they're creating their own thing. That's kind of – and that can go to, you know, my Twitter or my Facebook or TonyLittle.com. Or it can go to you.
No, send it to Tony. Send it to Tony. I get enough weird stuff via email.
Well, I can do a show on all the weird stuff you get.
Oh, my God. Mr. Media, listen to my great record. No. No. Mr. Media, I've written an e-book. Really, my mother thinks it's wonderful. You need to read it. No. No, send your interesting stuff to Tony Little.
Oh, yeah. No.
We're all in the Bay Area together. It's sending it to him. It's like sending it to me. That's fine. Listen, Tony, it was as I said to you before we started, it's kind of amazing to me in 30 years somehow we have not crossed paths being in this little community of ours. But it was a pleasure to meet you today and talk to you. And thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Media.
No, thank you. I really appreciate it.
It's all right.
Like the gentleman who had President Obama in the garage, right?
Hi, this is Buzz Burbank in the Buzz Burbank newsroom preparing for you another Buzz Burbank news and comment. Do you like good stories? Boy, I sure do. I turn over a lot of stones each day to make sure I don't miss the best ones. Sure, some make me angry and some make me sad and some make me laugh, and isn't that what makes us human? I'm proud of the fact that I pack more news into my 10 or 15 minutes a day than the evening news does in a half hour. It's a free podcast at BuzzBurbank.com, or you can subscribe free at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or get it on any RSS device. It's like a newspaper for your head. It's Buzz Burbank News and Comment, another Realm Network presentation. Day mornings right here on the Realm Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome to the George and Tony Entertainment Show. Prepare for awesome mediocrity.
We're the Cousin Oliver of the Realm Network. I'm George.
And I'm Tony.
And we're a weekly family-friendly podcast about pop culture.
From our point of view.
At RealmNetwork.com. The George and Tony Entertainment Show. From the Realm Network.
This is Snake. Do you read me, Otacon?
Loud and clear, Snake.
Did you listen to the latest episode of the Gaming Marathon on the Realm Network?
Of course. They really know their stuff about gaming, especially that Usid guy.
Yeah, but that Chirac guy is a real jerk. I don't like him.
Regardless, their reviews are spot on and they tell it like it is.
That's for sure.
What happened, Snake? Were you spotted?
Nah, it's just Lil Melser crying about the O's again.
Close call.
I better continue the search for Metal Gear, but keep listening to the Gaming Marathon each week.
You got it, Snake.
New every Monday afternoon right here on the Realm Network.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk, and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
And what you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
These are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot. Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
Irresistible, futile. It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network. And catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights.